I found it really difficult to find out where the pork had come from, and it just really sparked a thing in me. And I was like, surely there must be a way to get good local pork. And I thought, all right, I can do this. I'll get a pig and I'll start growing our own meat. It won't be that hard, surely. I've grown every other kind of animal. Pigs won't be that difficult. My husband was like, what the hell are you doing with this pig? And I was like, it's all right. We're gonna grow some pigs and we're gonna eat their produce. It's gonna be great. And he's like, we don't have any farm. And I was like, it's all right. We'll work that out later.
This is The Crackling. I'm Anthony Huckstep. The determination to create a better world can be an intoxicating driving force for change. After growing up in a regional New South Wales town on a mixed cropping and cattle stud farm, Lauren Mathers felt a real connection to the land. While running a small food store, she realised she couldn't source good local pork. Determined to stay local, she set about creating her own pig farm and now produces some of Australia's very best pork. Lauren, you grew up on a farm. What was life like on the farm back then?
Growing up on the farm was pretty amazing. We had 2,500 acres to roam across. We had cattle, sheep. We grew rice and cereal crops, so there was always something happening. Mum and Dad were always working, and I just felt like we were outside all the time. We never watched telly. Mum just sort of basically kicked us out in the morning and we didn't come home till night time. And I had a horse, so I would ride my horse to my friend's place like 12 k's away. And we were really privileged, always up a tree and or helping Mum and Dad. I remember helping Dad in the shearing shed. I'd take days off work and rouse about for him. I'd drive the snig bin on the tractors when we were harvesting, and I felt really lucky that we got to experience all that.
What was food like? Take us to the kitchen in your childhood. What sort of dishes did your parents prepare?
Mum's a really good cook, and her mum was a really good cook too. So I was always in the kitchen with Mum. We'd make cakes and cookies and made everything from scratch always. Mum grew a lot of her own food as well. So we had a beautiful orchard and a veggie garden, which was, pretty scary because we've got some snakes up here. But, the food was always good. I can never remember eating a good pork roast though, ever. Like, it was just something that we never had. And when we ate it, it was just, it was nothing special except for the crackle. But Mum was a good cook. She would experiment with like Thai and Vietnamese food, and we never sort of went hungry. And we grew a lot of our own meat as well, so we're always eating our own cattle and sheep and chooks. I remember, killing the roosters and the chooks when it was time to eat them, and watching them run around the backyard with no heads. It was super entertaining.
Now, you became a pig farmer later in life, but there was a couple of things before that. What was the first sort of chosen vocation for you?
Well, I studied ag at uni, and then quickly I did science first, actually, and then went into journalism. So I did journalism for 3 years.
Wow.
Yeah, and I loved journalism, but I didn't finish the course. I just sort of grew tired of it, and then I did I've done lots of things. I did personal training, and then loved that, did fitness, and then came back to Barron when I met Lockie and worked at his trucking depots. He's got a transport company. So I worked there for a few years and just got really bored and just wasn't stimulating enough for me. So I went back to study ag, and I did it through UNE at Armidale. And I really loved that experience because I could still work. So I was the vet nurse in Barron for a few years and worked there while I studied. And then my first real job, I guess, like proper job for what I trained for was I was an environmental project officer out in the creek. So the creek that I grew up on, actually, my first job was to do an action plan, like an environmental management plan for that creek.
Wow.
Yeah, it was awesome. So it was really close to my heart, and I got to work really closely with all the farmers that I grew up with. And so I spent most of my days having cups of tea and looking at their creek, basically. It was a pretty sweet job. But then I realised that this was around the time when the water was taken away from farms. It became separated and became a commodity. So farmers, in the middle of the drought, they didn't have any water. And they were really stressed, and I could see their anguish and, you know, just the impact it was having on their mental health. And I thought, you know, there must be something that these guys can grow with less water that's high value. And it just got me thinking that, you know, maybe there's another way to do this. And at the same time, like, I finished that project, and when Kevin Rudd became Prime Minister, he cut the funding for any of those sort of environmental jobs. He cut the funding for them through the CMA. So I opened up a food store with a childhood friend who also grew up in Barham, and we focused it on, this was in 2008, so we focused on, you know, sourcing local produce and making really good coffee and working with those farmers to get their produce on the plates of local people. And it sort of was, back then, it was just not heard of in the country. It was really progressive, and the food store is still open today, you know, and it's great, and she uses a lot of local produce. So that sort of set that off, and at the same time I started thinking that, you know, how good would a farmer's market be here? And I won a bursary to travel to France to look at their farmer's markets, and when I got back, I left the long paddock, had a baby, started a farmer's market, and started growing pigs at the same time. So we couldn't get good pork. I remember cooking the pork at the long paddock, you know, classic pork belly, everyone wanted a pork belly, and mince to make dumplings and things. And it just, there was something about the pork that was really inconsistent, and I was like, what's going on here? Why does that smell so bad? And why does it taste so different? And I found it really difficult to find out where the pork had come from, and it just really sparked a thing in me. And I was like, surely there must be a way to get good local pork, and I couldn't get it, especially not free range. And then when we spoke to other farmers, it was actually hard to get any information out of anyone. And Belinda Hagen from McIver Farm Foods, she was great. And I remember speaking to her for hours on end about Berkshires. And so I thought, all right, I can do this. I'll get a pig and I'll start growing our own meat. It won't be that hard. Surely I've grown every other kind of animal. Pigs won't be that difficult. And I remember going to pick up Doris from one of our neighbours. They rang and said, you know, we've got this pig. She's, you know, we don't need her anymore. Like, the kids aren't home anymore. And they're the ones who sort of got her in the first place. So I went to pick up Doris, classically just thought that I must have watched too many Babe movies or something, but I thought that she would just jump in the back of the trailer, because, you know, pigs are smart. And I was like, get up. And she didn't. She just took off, obviously. Like, it's bloody funny. She took off across their orchard, and here I am chasing this pig, and the farmer wasn't home. And he got home and he goes, what are you doing? I was like, oh, Doris is out and I can't get her back in. He said, oh, yes, you just need a bucket of food. So he went and got, the lesson number one was always move pigs with food. And he got a bucket of milk, and she went straight into the trailer. And that's how it all started. And we had no room on the farm. Like, we were on a farm, but we didn't own the land. We just owned a house. It was like 2 acres. And, brought her home, and Locke's like, my husband was like, what the hell are you doing with this pig? And I was like, it's all right. We're going to grow some pigs, and we're going to eat their produce. It's going to be great. And he's like, we don't have any farm. And I was like, it's all right. We'll work that out later. Just anyway, he just thought I was mad. And then she got quite depressed. So we got another pig to keep her company, Wanda. And then we found Betty. And so we had these three pigs living in the orchard at our house. And I remember Lockie just thinking it was outrageous, but then I caught him one day, you know, giving Doris a pat over the fence, and he was like scratching her neck, and I realized that then he was in, and it was all going to be okay.
Well, even though you grew up on a farm, and going from running a food store and cooking as well to actually farming pigs is a pretty big step. What were some of the early challenges you encountered?
Obviously, space for the pigs and what to feed them. But we couldn't find a nutritionist that up here that had done any pig formulations for nutrition. And so for the first few years, we were just getting sort of the scrappy food left over from a company called James & Sons, and they were just giving us the stuff off the floor. And I'm pretty sure it was horse food and sheep food and all the bits mixed in. But the pigs grew well on it, and we quickly learned that, you know, pigs will grow well on anything. It's just, you know, how do you do it so you get a consistent product? So for us, we worked with the local feed company to come up with our own diet. which was really good. We didn't want any sort of genetically modified grains or artificial bits and pieces, antibiotics or, you know, nothing nasty in it. And it worked out really well. And the pigs sort of were thriving, and that was sort of the first thing, was just getting the nutrition right. And then obviously everyone will tell you fences, you've got to have good fences with pigs, or just a hot wire. So there's always pigs out, or, you know, and then farrowing, like keeping the piglets safe so they don't get rolled over on and everything. But, you know, it's like it's any animal. And I didn't want to get into, like, I always thought that I'd be the one to take over mum and dad's cattle farm. Like, we had a start, and I was just assumed I'd be that lucky kid that got to, you know, inherit the farm. But it didn't work out that way. And because I was doing it on my own, Lockie didn't really want to be involved. You know, growing beef wasn't really an option. And we just saw that niche for the pork. And, you know, we've learnt a lot along the way. We'll probably write a book on how not to farm pigs, I reckon, before we wrote one on how to farm pigs. Like, it's, I mean, we learn every day. There's new things that we learn every day.
Well, tell us about the environment that you're in and why it's so good for pig farming, and what is it like on the farm for the pigs?
Yeah, we live on a very flat part of Australia, flat floodplain. So our landscape's typically red gum trees and black box trees, big open plains basically, and lots of salt bush and native grasses and things. So, and the soils are quite a heavy chocolate clay. It's beautiful soil. It holds on to moisture really well. So we don't have a very high rainfall. We get about 350 mils of rain a year. And the last couple of years, I don't think we've had an average rainfall at all. Like, we didn't get that wet effect that the rest of Australia had. We've only just sort of coming out of drought now. It's typical. We didn't have any rain last winter. So we've been, you know, it's been really, that's the most stressful thing, I think, is this environment. It's really arid. It's really hot and dry in summer, and typically meant to be wet and very cold in winter. So, I mean, this morning was, everything was just ice. We had ice on the windscreen. There was ice in the buckets, like the pump freezes. So it's very extreme, the weather. So the pigs, the Berkshire breed are great because they're very well suited to outdoor breeding. If you had a large white out in the open plains and in forested areas, I don't know, they'd survive really well. They'd get sunburnt, and B, they're not really adapted to that kind of environment. So the Berkies are really tough. And as long as they've got, you know, a wallow in summer and shelter and hay in winter, they're pretty happy. We noticed that throughout the drought, not having any grass or anything for them to graze on. And I was personally really stressed, and it affected me really deeply, the drought. And it breaks my heart seeing the ground so dry and nothing growing. And but the pigs, I remember being down the paddock one day, and the pigs, you know, were splashing around in the mud and underneath the trees in their straw, and they didn't look stressed, like they were really happy. So I thought, you know, it's okay, like the environment's always going to be changing, as long as the animals are happy, that's the main thing.
Well, the pigs are free range. What does it take to maintain that?
Yeah, I mean, we've always just had humongous, big, open-ranging paddocks, and really that we noticed during the drought that we just couldn't run the animals like that, and we've shifted towards a more when we get our cover crops up and everything's very vegetated and recovered, we'll move them in a more regenerative kind of manner. So small paddocks, moving them often, and that's going to be better for our soil. Better for the animals. They're always going to have grass if we manage the farm like that. And we've always just thought that big open plains is, you know, because that's how I grew up, just paddocks, big open paddocks, you know, heaps of room to range, but it's actually not that great for your soil. So, and the ground cover. So you want those animals running high volume across that land in a short amount of time, and then you rest it for longer. So our farm wasn't getting enough rest. And we just noticed that specifically in the latest drought, that, you know, water was pooling on top of the soil, and we weren't maintaining ground cover. And I was like, we need to change the way we're doing it. So we're in the middle of that now, and hopefully see some good changes.
Well, farming isn't the only thing that you do. There's the butchering and also the deli, the charcuterie. Tell us about what it takes from the growing the pig side of things to get the right product for what you do with the butchering and the charcuterie.
Yeah, I mean, we started off using other butchers. So I used to take the pigs to the abattoir with the kid in the back seat and the pigs in the trailer and drop them off. And a couple of days later, we'd go back over and go to the Gumbau butchers, and Tom and I would, you know, I'd just watch basically and tell him what we wanted, and he would teach me a lot about the butchering. And I thought, you know, that doesn't look that hard. And so one day I jumped on the knives and gave him a hand, and I just really enjoyed it, because I remember when I was a kid, I thought I always wanted to be a vet, and I remember cutting up dead animals. If I found a dead animal, I'd cut it open and have a look inside, and I was just fascinated. But I got the same kick out of butchering our animals, and I thought, God, this is actually, I really like this. And when the driving around became really, just became sort of wore me out with the kids and everything, and we couldn't get our smoking done up where we are. No one had a license, so we'd send it down to Peter Boucher when Troy was working there, and they'd make our bacon and ham, and we'd have to pick it up before we went to market. So there was a lot of running around and a lot of miles, and it didn't really suit, you know, having kids doing all that. So so we cleaned out the carport basically and built a butcher shop, and Locke once again just shook his head and said, what are you doing? I said, she's all right, it's all right, it's going to be fine. I can do this. And he's like, who can get to butcher? And I was like, it's fine, we can do it. So I think Frida, my second daughter, she was newborn, and that's when we did that. So Locke would bring her out for a feed at like 2:30 in the morning, and I'd still be out there practicing away and trying to get our meat ready for orders for that week. And it went like that for a little while until I got the knack of it, and it became easier. And then I got someone to help pack. And it was great, because we could give the feedback directly back to the feed company, or I could see what was going on the farm and see the effects of that in the meat. So if we found like sometimes the meat would slip away from the fat, and we'd tell the nutritionist, and you'd back off on the oil a little bit, and I think that now they don't even put oil in it. So there was a really good relationship between what we were doing on the farm and the quality of the meat, and we've been able to have control of that process the whole way because we've always done the butchering. So, I mean, then obviously pigs yield so well and you get so much use out of them that I actually thought it was a bit of a waste just to eat it as a roast or just to eat it as fresh meat. And when we went to France, we got to eat this amazing charcuterie, and I couldn't actually find anything like it in Australia. And I thought, you know, we've got this amazing product, we need to preserve it. And it was just this real want to preserve it so it lasted longer. And it suited our business model too, because we're a small farm and small numbers. We could get more yield and more serves out of a pig if we preserved it and sold it in smaller portions. So that's when the charcuterie dream was born. And it was basically just trial and error, reading lots of books and spending lots of time just making things and getting the humidity and the temperatures right. And, yeah, it's been a bit of a journey. But now, like, everything's used. Like, we don't waste anything. We use, you know, the bones boil down into broths and things, and I'm doing all the butchering now. We don't actually have a butchery. We don't have a butcher on site anymore. So I've spent a few years away. I've spent a few years away from that processing, and thought it would be better to have butchers in, but I've quickly realised this week that, like, I really do love that part of it, and I love being able to produce everything and use all the waste. And it's been really good, and I love working with our team, and I get a lot of satisfaction out of using the whole animal and just the amazing products that we can make. So
tell us a bit about the charcuterie that you're making. Did you have any failures on the way, and what sort of successes, what do you really love that you're making at the moment?
I really love at the moment I'm really loving the broths, because they're so versatile. You can do anything with them, and they use all that waste, like the bones and the fat and things that you would normally just piff out or give to the dogs. We're actually turning them into nutritious goods. So I really love that side of it. But I mean, you can't beat whole cured mussels like Capicolo, Lonza, a little French ham. Those three products I think are just so delicious, and I never get tired of eating them. And they're just we learned along the way different ways to cure and different ways to like different lengths of time of curing them now. And whereas when we first started, we'd salt everything down and leave them for sort of 10 days and we just wash them off and hang them up, cover them in spice. But now we cure them down for 3 weeks in the spice and the salt, and then at the end we equalize it with water for a few hours and then dry them and hang them up, and we don't put any extra spices on them. They oxidate when you put spices on the outside. So yeah, we've just always trying to tweak it and make it better, and we do a lot of pH testing now, whereas before we just use anything, but now we're sort of focusing on larger animals and getting that real depth of flavour into the meats and making sure that they're, you know, really hitting that sweet mark. Well, we love to make salami, but we've got someone in Sydney making that for us today, actually. He's doing the first batch. So, I think the salami will be next level good. We're using old sows that have sort of reached the end of their breeding life. And for us, that's like the ultimate thing is, you know, getting value out of every single animal. And the girls that aren't breeding well, I mean, the guys rang me from Sydney today and said, these pigs are unbelievable. I'm like, I know, that's why they're there. So I think that'll be exciting, that next sort of step in with the charcuterie that we're doing.
Well, if pig farming and butchering and making charcuterie isn't enough for you to do, you also established a cooperative to build a community-owned micro abattoir in Barham as well. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I mean, like back in the day when I was telling you about when we used to take the pigs down to the abattoir with the kids in the back seat, I mean, that was a half an hour drive, and they rang one day and just said, don't send your pigs, we're closed. And I said, oh, I'll send them tomorrow. And they said, no, you can't, like we're closed, we're done. And it was a real shock because they were family owned and operated. And at the time I remember thinking, oh, maybe we should just build our own. But then we'd spoken to other farmers about it, and they were like, you know, maybe we could all do a mobile abattoir. And we looked at that, and it wasn't really going to be a viable thing for our area because everyone's so fast, like spread apart. So we sent our pigs to the next abattoir along, which was Echuca, so an hour away. And then nearly a year to the date, they closed their doors with no warning, and we had to go to Benalla. And it was just a snap, like the pigs were on the trailer ready to go. And I just remember the feeling of insecurity. I was like, this is our business and this is our livelihood, and it's worked so well because we've had an abattoir. And if we're going through this, other people must be in the same boat. So we called a meeting at our house, and we had 40 people, like 40 farmers came around and had a few beers and a few snags, and all decided that we should build our own abattoir and that we'd set up a cooperative. So that, you know, we just felt power to the farmers. You know, we all need it. We've all got the same common goal that we want an ethical kill, that we don't have to drive, you know, 3 or 4 hours one way to get them. We'll be able to, you know, have our own delivery system. And we just thought the only way that we're going to have a secure future with farming livestock in this region is if we build our own abattoir. And so last year we were lucky enough to get the council on board, and they helped us secure enough money, so over $2 million, to build a micro abattoir. So the DA, like development applications, in the process at the moment. We've done all the pre-works on this site. This is going to happen. I just can't believe it's been like 5 years in the making, and we've got a really great group of people with the same vision, and I think that's why cooperatives have worked so well and last for so long, is because you've all got an invested interest in it. We've all invested money in it, and we all have the same common goal. So unless that changes one day, it'll be a really successful model that hopefully we can replicate to other areas. But I know that other regions have trouble with exactly the same kind of thing, and we don't know, like JBS has just bought Rivoli and then Hardwicks has been sold. So the decentralising it is, you know, the meat industry in Australia doesn't support small farmers, but models like this will.
How has pig farming enriched your life?
Oh, I can't imagine my life without pigs now. No, I can't. It's really strange. It's just like who we are now. Like, and it sounds so strange. And when I try and look at ourselves from the outside and look back in, like we're essentially pig farmers. Like we never thought that we would be pig farmers, but I don't know. Like it's very grounding. It's taught me a lot of patience and life lessons. It's also given me a huge sense of satisfaction in growing pigs in a paddock free range the way they should be farmed. And that's always been very important to us, is letting the pigs just be pigs, and especially helping the Berkshire breed along. So, you know, if we don't eat these rare breeds, then they won't be here for us. Australia's only got a certain amount of genetics. We can't import any genetics. So maintaining that breed and making it better and more resilient and more suited to our conditions and suited for the products that we make is, it's really, really important to us. And I can't imagine not doing it, to be honest.
What do you think is so special about pork?
I think, remember the first time that we tasted our pork was the night before the first farmer's market in Barham. And I remember tasting it and it just didn't taste like anything I'd ever tasted before. And I just think it's amazing that an animal, just because of its breed and how it's raised, can taste so good. And I think pork is so nutritious and you make so many different products out of it. I think that's what makes it so special, is that it's so versatile, and the pigs are so good for the paddocks as well. Like, we don't use any fertilizers or we don't plow, and the pigs do all that work for us. So there's a real harmony in what we do, and they're a massive part of it. We couldn't do it with sheep and we couldn't do it with cattle. The pigs are the golden ticket. the most wondrous animal, and they're just so cool to sit. Like, we can sit at our dinner table and look out and see our pigs running around the paddocks, and there's something very grounding about that.
When you get the opportunity to sit down and eat your pork in a restaurant, how does it feel, and is there some experiences that you can tell us about?
Oh, I'm really, really proud, actually. The most recent, well, there's obviously not much dining happening in the last 12 months, but most recently we went to Firedoor in Sydney. We were lucky enough to nab a spot at the bar, and I just sort of sat down with the staff and, you know, could share our story about what we're doing and where we see our business heading, and, you know, how important the pigs are to our farm and how we're farming regeneratively. And then we got to sit at the table and they opened the doors and we watched everyone come in, and then Lennox cooked for us, like, right in front of us. He cut these huge big racks and flamed them over the grill, and then we watched his sous chef cut them up and we ate them, and everyone in the restaurant was eating our pork, and the guy sitting next to us, he was like, "Oh, this is the best pork ever." And he looked over and he goes, "Are you guys the farmers?" Like, yeah, that's our pork. And he's like, "It's amazing. This is so good." And it was like this really crazy moment where we were like 900 kilometers from home, and this random guy next to us was just eating our pork, and he could actually tell us face to face. So it was pretty epic. Like, those kind of things, you never get tired of going out and eating your own produce at a restaurant. It's all very surreal. And but it's important, because these guys that use our pork, they care about where it comes from, and those relationships with these chefs and restaurants is, you know, an integral part of what we do. And we don't work with people who don't care about where their produce comes. We're, you know, very picky about who uses our stuff, and it's paid off, because you have these long-lasting relationships with people.
Now that you can get good pork locally, how do you like to cook it at home?
We don't eat a lot of pork at home, to be honest. We don't eat that much meat, but when we do eat the pork at home, I still think you cannot beat a crumbed pork schnitzel. There's something about a crumbed pork schnitzel with parmesan and all the fresh herbs out of the garden in it. So crunchy and yummy and sweet, and you keep them nice and pink in the middle. And I could eat schnitzels till the cows come home, or till the pigs come home. Like, they're not too fatty, you know. Like, it's beautiful stuff. But then I also am like totally in love with our ramen broth at the moment, because the ramen's just you feel like you're injecting your body full of goodness. It just makes you feel so good and warm. And so, yeah, they're probably my two favourite things that we're eating at the moment.
Do you have a secret tip to making good ramen at home?
Yeah, just use good bones, basically, and just boil them down until they get, until the bones become, you can sort of squish them between your fingers till they become really soft. So that means all the goodness has come out of the bones. And then we use an organic rice miso that we get from one of the farmers markets in Castlemaine. And I think those that is essential to the flavor and the umami in the broth. And, you know, you get old soft-poached egg, and I don't even put extra pork in it. I just have it like that with noodles and fresh chives. But I think you've got to boil bones down enough so you're getting all the fat and the marrow out of there to make it really, really good for you.
Now that you are a pig farmer, and as you mentioned earlier, it surprised you a little bit, but what do you love about what you do and the life that you guys live now?
I love it that the kids are so involved. Like the kids, you know, as a family, we can do everything together. Like we planted, the kids and I planted 700 trees on our farm a couple of weeks ago and right before it rained. And I think farming is a game of timing, and we've been so busy over the years that we've never really quite nailed the timing of, you know, when it's going to rain and getting some pastures in or getting a cover crop in. So it's like this game that you play every year because no two seasons are ever the same. So it's this constantly changing environment that you're always learning from and always trying to improve. So that has never, I'll never tire of that sort of, like, do tire of it. When it doesn't rain, I tire of it. But because it's because we're always there to see the changing seasons and to get the kids involved, and they love it. Like seeing the kids on the farm, like they ride their motorbikes, and you know, we can, we're on the edge of the bush, so we can just duck out to the bush and go mushrooming, or you know, we've got this incredible place where we live that just nurtures this gorgeous relationship with the land and the environment and the kids. And we all thrive on it. We love it. We're, you know, a kilometre from the Murray River, so we jump on our boat and go to the pub for dinner and boat home again. So that those kind of things is what I love about where we live. And, you know, just seeing how pigs change the landscape as well, and how the soil's been improved in time that we've had the farm, it's pretty special.
It all started with Doris and you chasing her through the property. Have you had any mishaps in the years that you've been pig farming since?
Oh, endless, endless amount of mishaps. I remember when we didn't have the farm set up yet, and we had, we used to have a boxer dog called Reggie, and the pigs, because we live right, we're literally on the edge of the forest, the pigs, so Doris, Wanda and Betty and our boar Kevin Bacon, they would go... So they would all take out off out into the bush every day, because I remember there was a flood that year, so they were out wallowing in the flood water, and at the end of the day Reggie would go round them up and bring them back. So that was like, a you didn't know whether they were going to come back. They'd always, but they'd come back every night and snuggle up and go to bed. I mean, when we first had Doris, she used to sleep on the back step with Reggie. So she thought she was a dog for a while, and she just became too she got too big, and I was like, come on, out of here. Like, this is just not cool. Like, so, yeah, you have your sort of funny little moments where, you know, piglets get out and, you know, they chase bike riders down the road, and mostly good things happen, and, you know, pigs are comical creatures. They're always doing something funny and making you laugh, or, you know, biting you on the leg because you've picked up their piglet. I've got tusk masks in the back of my leg from... a boar throwing his head at me because I got in between him and another boar. And yeah, like it's mainly good things.
Well, Lauren, we've loved having you on the Crackling today to hear your story. Please keep in touch, and we'd love to catch up again soon.
Yeah, thanks so much, Anthony.
This is The Crackling, a Deep in the Weeds production in partnership with Porkstar. I'm Anthony Huckstep. Stay tuned as we catch up with some of Australia's best chefs and pork producers to discover what makes Australian pork so special.